This is the Lombardi Line with Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Busy second hour of the Lombardi Line ahead. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook as we welcome in our DraftKings Network audience live on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Lots to get into this hour coming up in 20 minutes. SiriusXM NHL Network radio host Jonathan Davis is going to join the show. We'll get into all things Stanley Cup Game 6 that's coming up later tonight. We'll also talk a few NFL awards markets a little bit later. We're going to end the show with Wood Palm have a qualm like we always do on a Friday. But we're going to start out in the NBA, where yesterday J.J. Redick was hired as the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. All we know right now is that it is a four-year contract, so 2 years fewer than were initially offered to Dan Hurley, the head coach of UConn. No compensation has been reported yet, to my knowledge, but initial thoughts on the hiring there from you, Mike.
High risk, high reward. I mean, they're going to take a novel approach to somebody with no experience. I'm sure he will build a staff that has a ton of experience to try to offset his lack of it. If he gets along with LeBron, I think maybe that's a prerequisite of trying to manage this team. I mentioned to you off air, maybe it's harder for a college coach like Hurley or even a Cal or somebody like that to step into the pros, where you go from having complete control. Although, and now in this NIL market and no border market where they can change teams every year and there's no, right? I mean, maybe it's different than it once was, and that's why college coaches are looking to get out. But maybe it's harder for them to go from that atmosphere to what, you know, it is in the NBA. And what exactly the role of the coach is in the NBA other than to establish a philosophy. And maybe they make up some matchup decisions during a game. But, I mean, it's more like a ringmaster thing. I mean, these guys aren't in control. I mean, they decide when they're going to give them an extra day off and stuff like that. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's a splash move. I don't wish anything bad for Redick. I'm not fans of Duke people, obviously, being a North Carolina fan, but best of luck to him, and maybe he can make the Lakers relevant again. I know, you know, they've been in the play-in a few times. They won their bubble asterisk title with LeBron in the COVID year. They probably were better than we thought. I know it was a terrible matchup to get Denver, but you had to make yourself be in the playoffs. You couldn't risk getting run out and not even been in the bracket, right? And they said they should have lost that game and got the 8th seed and been able to play Oklahoma City because they would have been able to beat everybody but Denver. Well, as it turns out, Denver didn't make it either. So maybe they're not as far away as we think, but they've got to add some pieces. Yeah. It can't just be two. And one of them who is not always healthy and the other one who's at the twilight of the career.
Yeah, the best player in the world, but aging and on his way out at this point, certainly. And Rob Pelinka is going to have his work cut out for him, to your point, with trying to compete in what is a stacked Western Conference. You're going to need to build more people around him. Apparently, Anthony Davis was a big part of the conversation, in addition to what we already know is LeBron's relationship with J.J. Redick and the podcast they host together. Apparently, Davis had a big voice in this as well, the two of them talking on Monday of this week. And I just wonder, with the Lakers, in terms of like the attractiveness and the appeal of this job, when you think about how much pressure is on this franchise at all times, despite the fact that they haven't been particularly good, aside from, obviously, as we talked about, that bubble championship that they do have in recent history. Like, give them credit for that. They do have one for sure. But it's a tough place to be a head coach with the level of scrutiny that you're under, especially being a first-time head coach at any level for J.J. Redick.
And he's going to have to be able to separate himself, I think, from his relationships that he already has with certain of their players. And
well, what's that going to be like the first time he's in a huddle where he's drawing up a play and LeBron says, no, I don't want to do that, grabs the whiteboard and draws something up himself? Like, there's going to be a lot of different learning lessons and things like that along the way.
What's it going to be like the first time he thinks Anthony Davis isn't giving max effort?
Sure.
And these guys that got him this job, right? That's a very difficult thing. It's like I make it a comparison to dealers that come dual rates. And for those that aren't familiar with the term, it generally means anybody that has two job classifications that they regularly work. So, you know, there are dealers who are trained to be supervisors. And some days they're dealers and some days they're supervisors, right? But it's also hard to interact because when you're with the regular full-time supervisors or managers, you're still a dealer. And when you're with your dealers, you know, at times you're supervising them and correcting their mistakes or pointing out things that they did wrong or calling for discipline for them. So it's really a world in between where you don't belong to either.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a good situation.
It's tough.
But it is. It's tough. I think that's the thing. It's a challenge right now. Looking at the Lakers' odds in the Western Conference for next season, they're tied with the Clippers for 14-1, sixth on the odds board. And meanwhile, the Boston Celtics are actually celebrating their NBA title today. They've got the parade going in Boston. The duck boats are out there, +290. Did that surprise you how low they opened right out the gates?
Why would you tie up your money for 13 months? I mean, do you think that's the it's going to dramatically change when they start the year 8-2 or something like that? I mean, you can wait and not have to tie up your money the whole way. They did have
+125 in the Eastern Conference as well.
Just make them -150. I mean, everybody else is going to implode along the way anyhow. I was watching the 30 for 30, the Celtics-Lakers one, you know, where Ice Cube narrates from the Lakers' point of view and Wahlberg from the Celtics. It's also a tough time when you're the Lakers when you see the Celtics on top too, right? When that was the rivalry of the last 40 years.
Now they're ahead of you on the streak now. There was something in Major League Baseball that you wanted to discuss. Let's get into it.
I put this as a part of the no hyperbole yesterday. I don't know what day it is, but it's amazing to me this story isn't getting more coverage. And for those who aren't familiar, Pat Hoberg is a Major League Baseball umpire. He's been a regular umpire since 2017. He's famous because in the 2022 World Series between the Phillies and the Astros, he called a perfect game behind the plate. You know, that umpire auditor that comes out every day, oh, this guy had 18 misses and it was the worst.
He didn't miss anything.
Every pitch was correct by the zone, right? By the box. He's widely regarded as the best ball and strikes umpire in the game amongst players and managers and a top three umpire overall. He's a young man still, and he's from Urbandale, Iowa. I didn't pick up on this story either because I was more focused on this Angel Hernandez and what they were doing with him. Remember, he was injured to start the year, and he came back and all that, and then eventually agreed to retire. But September 17th, he worked a regular season game last year, and people have gone back and looked. There's nothing apparent that happened to him, but he didn't work any more regular season games the last 2 weeks of the year, and Major League Baseball said he suffered an injury and got no postseason assignments. He's injured, right? He'd worked the last two World Series, which is rare because they go on a rotation basis, not necessarily merit. It's not straight merit grading.
But again, to your point, he'd worked the last two World Series and is considered one of the best umpires.
No postseason assignments, but he was injured. Now he comes back and works two spring training games and then disappears again. And the assumption is, well, he re-aggravated whatever injury there was. On Friday of last week, so 1 week ago, Rob Manfred, again, making an announcement to say there's no announcement, comes out. Major League Baseball issues a statement from the commissioner's office. Major League Baseball umpire Pat Hoberg was suspended for violating MLB's gambling policy for umpires. Because Hoberg has appealed the decision, we can't give you any details. So they're not going to tell you the severity of the suspension. They're not going to tell you what specifically he did. Hoberg comes out and says, I'm appealing this. I will be vindicated. Major League Baseball Umpires Union says we've been working with him since spring training when he was removed from umpiring games due to what they say is a gambling violation. So the policy on gambling for umpires is you can bet on anything, anywhere, anytime except baseball.
At any level.
No baseball. No high school baseball, no college baseball, no Pan Am games, no Olympics. Obviously no major league, no minor league baseball. So if they're pulling him off the field, they're saying he bet on baseball in some way, shape, or form. Oh, I should say they did say in their announcement on Friday, we are confident that none of the games he officiated were compromised in any way because of this. I wish there were more details. Nobody's really picked up other than posting the two statements.
Correct.
And every article is just posting and copying, like AP story.
It's totally
right?
copy
There's
and paste.
Nothing new.
Yeah.
There's no investigative reporting. Where are the people in this industry? If this is true, if he bet on Major League Baseball, I mean, this is a bigger story than all these players. You know, they suspended for life 1 year.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. This is right after all of the Shohei Ohtani stuff has happened. This is right after you just levied a lifetime ban on a player. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, like, this is something that you would think because
right after
it is
this DeJounte Porter in the NBA and all the scandal.
That the way that all of these things have happened in such short order, you would think that there would be people that are really diving into this. But maybe it is because it's behind the scenes that they just haven't had anything truly good to report yet, and they are looking into it.
But nobody's running with it, and nobody's run with it since September 17th, which I think is where the smoke is. Not that it's spring-taining.
That's absolutely the interesting part.
He would have been working at least a championship series in the playoffs.
But then if this is if that is true, though, to your point, why would they even have him back for spring training games? Why would they even have him officiate anything?
Well, there's a lot of questions here. I call on the great investigative journalist in our arena, Ben Fox, where are you here? Don't wait for somebody to send in somebody bet 10,000 on something. Dave Tooley, put down that 96-ounce steak and find out what's going on.
You're something.
I am something. Yeah.
Again, Hoberg, though, is appealing the discipline. He has denied in any capacity betting on baseball, but the MLB in a statement did not indicate whether or not the investigation into Hoberg showed that he bet on baseball.
I got to reach out to people in Urbandale and Des Moines and see if they can get some more information.
Is that, but like, I loved what you said, though, about the announcement that there is no announcement.
Why even say anything?
Correct.
All you're doing is he violated and we can't tell you anything about it. That makes it worse for the accused.
I never understand that we're being transparent, except we're actually not at all being transparent.
The DA would have to say, we are alleging you committed these crimes.
Yeah.
Now you're appealing it and we have to prove it. Why can't they say what the crimes were? And maybe it's that umpire's union strong. Maybe there's something in the umpire's union that says they can't discuss it. But my God, this is what at a minimum, this has been going on for 3 months. I think it's been going on for 8 or 9 months, but that's just conjecture.
But I mean, a warranted discussion, especially with how prevalent all these issues have been in recent history. Okay, we're going to hit the break when we come back to the NHL Game 6 coming up tonight. Florida Panthers, will they clinch their first Stanley Cup in franchise history, or will Edmonton win another elimination game? Jonathan Davis is going to help us break it all down next.
Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Next week, we're releasing our VSiN NFL betting guide, your ultimate resource for the football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, and of course, best bets for the upcoming season. To get the guide, though, you must be a pro subscriber. Right now, you can sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription for just $199. That's down from our usual price of $240. Plus, when you use our promo code Lombardi today, we're going to throw in an extra month absolutely free. With a VSiN Pro subscription, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. Don't miss your chance to sign up and save ahead of the season. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe now and use that promo code Lombardi to claim your discount and bonus month. Again, that's VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi. Back to the NFL alongside Mike Palm. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. The Oilers trailed 3-0 against the Panthers in the Stanley Cup final, yet tonight have the opportunity to force a game 7. Excited to welcome into the show the one and only Jonathan Davis on the Progressive Guest Line, SiriusXM NHL Network radio host. You can follow him on X at West Coast Hockey HKY. Jonathan, how are we doing today? Welcome in.
We're doing great. And Stormy, you're an honorary Canadian today, I can see.
Yeah, see? I told you the Canadian tuxedo female edition is working today. Where's the Stanley Cup behind you? I feel like usually I'm used to seeing the giant cup in the background. What's up?
It has shifted locations for today.
Devastating.
Yeah, it's on its way to Edmonton, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. So, yeah, okay, let's start there. The Cup is in the building tonight. What level of pressure is that on the Florida Panthers as they try to close things out yet again? Edmonton has won back-to-back elimination games here.
You know, I think it's kind of reminiscent for me of what the LA Kings faced when they won their first Cup in 2012. Now, granted, Game 6 for LA was on home ice, and that's a different scenario, obviously, for Florida on the road. But you know, I think that, you know, Game 4, they were all geeked up. Game 5, you know, again, you know, you had, and Game 4, you had family in the building, a lot of distractions. Game 5, they never got their wits about them. And I think now for them, this 2 days off, I think it kind of helps. We're going to see a couple of lineup changes. One in particular is Nick Cousins on the fourth line, a guy that will add a little sandpaper to this group, hasn't played since the Eastern Conference Final. So, you know, I think they're in a good spot. And yeah, look, you guys talked about it earlier in the show about, you know, Edmonton's been so dominant, you know, pretty much since Game 3. But I think for Florida, if they can take away what they did in the third period against Edmonton in Game 5 and try to carry that over into Game 6, then I think they'll be in pretty good shape.
Jonathan, how important do you think the first goal is tonight in terms of if you don't have any pre-flop action because you're on a future position? How important is the first goal in terms of in-game betting tonight?
Well, I think the first goal is extremely important for Florida, because if Edmonton scores the first goal, that, you know, that building, which is one of the loudest buildings in the NHL, is, they may blow the roof off tonight if Edmonton scores first. So, you know, always on the road, you want to try to take, you know, you want to win the first 10 minutes. And if they can find a way to silence that crowd and make it rough, you know, just not make it a hostile environment. So strictly from that standpoint, from an in-game betting standpoint, look, if Edmonton scores first, I'd still be tempted to put some money on Florida if I didn't have the futures that I did. I'm just happy that I don't have to worry about that.
You sent me the note this morning about Stuart Skinner, who seems to have gotten better as the series have gone longer, 9-0 in games 4-7 of their respective series this postseason. Why do you think that that's happened for Skinner throughout the playoffs, that he's gotten better in crunch time in these sets?
You know, he's got a great attitude. He's one of the few goalies that actually talks on game day. I think the only one that I can remember was Martin Brodeur. I remember covering the Devils in some of their cup final runs. I was shocked that Brodeur would talk. His headspace is really good. And so I think, you know, that has kind of helped him as series has gone on. And I'll, you know, let's go back to when he got pulled. I think, you know, what happened in that Vancouver series, him getting pulled for those two games, you know, may have been the best thing for him, because he looks like a different goalie. He doesn't look like he's fighting the puck like he was earlier on in the playoffs, even against Los Angeles. He just looks like a much more confident goalie.
All right, I need your advice here, Jonathan, so I can say whether you were right or wrong. But
yes,
I'm going to give you a real life where I sit with the Conn Smythe market.
Okay.
And I've described the situation to you before, but so the listeners that haven't heard, 300 on Bobrovsky after game one against the Rangers at 9-1, which he's again now 9-1. I want to, you know. And then after game three, when Barkov was still plus 450, I took 300 on Barkov just in case he stole it. I still make 450 and I give away 300 of my. Now I'm sitting here and McDavid's minus 250, 270, 280 in the market. Is there anything I can do other than hope? I mean, I'm now 600 in. I'm not going to lay 1,500 to try to break even on McDavid and lose with Barkov. I don't think Barkov can win, is my opinion. But if you were in my position, how would you handle this?
I'd put the 1,500 out on McDavid. Mm. There's no way he's losing. This is his award. You know, you look, that's the only bet that I would make tonight. I mean, because I think everything you're hoping for, if you're betting the side or betting a total, or, you know, I like Paulie talking about that second period over. I get it. But you guys highlighted, you know, some of the numbers of Connor McDavid and what he's done here in the playoffs. He's also tied for the most points in the Stanley Cup playoffs when facing elimination. His record, his 8 points in these back-to-back games are a record for the most points when facing elimination. You got to go back to 1942, Mike, when you and I were first watching hockey, when that last happened, you know. So for me, whatever money you want to invest tonight, put it all on Connor McDavid to win the Conn Smythe. There's no way it's going any other way.
I was reading an article this morning from Pierre LeBrun on The Athletic, and there's a quote in it from Jonathan Marchessault, who, of course, won the Conn Smythe a year ago, who said, "I wasn't around for the other eras of the NHL, but he has to be the most dominant player to have ever played the game. The game is so fast now. The way he reacts is unbelievable. I think win or lose, Connor should be the guy to go get it." And, like, what do you think in the grand scheme of things? These are records that we never anticipated being broken from Wayne Gretzky. And he's out here not only breaking some, but opportunities to continue to build onto this legacy for him and potentially do something that hasn't been done since you guys were out there watching in 1942 when the Maple Leafs came back from down 3-0. Like, how would you describe just Connor McDavid and what he has done and what he has meant for the modern era of the sport?
It's, you know, people should really just sit back and understand and appreciate what they're watching, because it is something special. Look, Wayne Gretzky did it in 18 games. He put up the 47 points. It was a totally different era of hockey. What Connor is doing now in this game, it wouldn't shock me, Stormy and Mike, if someone was able to, you know, get to those numbers, because the way the players are are geared today and the way that they train and the way the game, you know, this is just natural for them. We're no longer playing in that clutch and grab where guys were having to water ski to get through the neutral zone. The talent level is just amazing. And so, yeah, we're seeing just pure greatness, whether you want, you know, Michael Jordan in the NBA would be maybe the closest comparison that I can think of off the top of my head.
I miss the center ice trap, I have to tell you. You know what I blame here for all of this nonsense and that we might lose all our bets here on this thing here, John? Yeah. You know who I blame for this? The Knights, who chose to lose to Anaheim because they thought the path was better to go to Dallas. I blame the Knights. They could have went to Edmonton and beaten Edmonton, and instead now we're set up for a big fall here.
Well, yeah, I'm not happy guys either because I had three. I had Dallas, the Rangers, and Florida. Yeah. Those are my five. I had futures on all three teams to win the cup, and here I may lose on all. I may lose out if Edmonton wins. Yeah, look, Vegas squandered a big opportunity, but look, I think Dallas was the bet, you know, was the better team, better than Edmonton. I just think by the time that they got to, you know, round three against Edmonton, they were so beat up after playing Vegas and Colorado.
Hey, you're not sweating too much because you do have multiple bets at various numbers on Connor McDavid to win Conn Smythe. So at least you're doing okay there. And the Panthers 9-1 is still alive as well. Last thing before we let you go, we've seen overgames the last three in the series. Do we get another one tonight or will the goaltending stand up?
I'm of the same philosophy I think Mike talked about earlier in the show. I would play the over tonight. And if we do get a game seven, I would play the under. But yeah, I would be on the over tonight. But I still say, put it all on Connor.
Yeah. If there is a bet to be made, you heard it here first. Jonathan Davis. David says it is Connor McDavid. See, and now I'm getting McDavid and the Davis and all of it all mixed up. But, yeah, Connor McDavid to win Conn Smythe up to -275 now after being +750 prior to Game 5. JD, you're awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Enjoy the game tonight. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
The only good thing if Edmonton wins, Jonathan, is I'll get to talk to you tomorrow afternoon.
There we go.
There you go. Hey, blessing in disguise.
And we'll all still be crying because at the end of the day, we have Florida futures. We do not want game seven. Okay, we're going to hit the break. When we come back, the Associated,
Shoto Imanaga has only given up three runs without recording an out so far. 3-0 Mets.
Stop.
3-0 Mets.
After we were hyping you up. Come on, Shota. Okay, we got to hit the break. We've got NFL futures coming up next. The AP gave us a little criteria for an awards market that was very questionable in the past. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Scorri Bonantoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, trends, and betting news. With the College World Series final beginning tomorrow between Texas A&M and top seed Tennessee, Aaron Moore has a breakdown for how best to approach the best of three set. Plus, the Stanley Cup final rolls on tonight. VSiN NHL expert Johnny Lazarus has a pair of articles up on how he's betting the game from a side and prop perspective. Will the Florida Panthers clinch their first cup in franchise history tonight? Please, I hope so. Cash my ticket already. I'm tired of this. Anyways, all that great stuff at VSiN.com. Alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're going to shift gears into a little NFL talk here because the Associated Press came out this week giving NFL awards voters a little direction and criteria for an awards market that, quite frankly, has been very vague. And the big question that we always ask ourselves when it comes to comeback player of the year is, what the hell are these guys coming back from? Well, in a statement that was sent out to all of the voters, the spirit of the AP Comeback Player of the Year Award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to miss playing time the previous season.
Not poor play.
Not poor play, not sitting on the bench, not sitting on your couch. So I think that's significant, though, especially for us from a betting perspective as it pertains to just crossing guys off the list more than anything
a
else.
A lot. You can cross out, Justin has on the rundown, 8 names here that you don't have to worry about handicapping.
Sam Darnold, 20-1. Russell Wilson, Daniel Jones, all 20. But why is Daniel Jones is coming back from significant injury, not just from being garbage.
Maybe Michael added that name.
Probably. I could see that. I could see that happening. But that is important. I think Bryce Young, exactly, down there, if you think that he's going to have a tremendous sophomore season.
Coming back from 5'10".
That's low-hanging fruit.
I know.
So you think you can say it? See, that's, no. I don't agree with that.
I absolutely do.
See, you're just making me lose my train of thought 20 times a day today.
Sorry. Michael's very focused. It's good. Different.
I think especially these two at the top, though, because Sam Darnold, somebody who had high expectations coming out of college. He was a highly touted draft pick, did not have success with the Jets, did not have success really anywhere, was a backup in San Francisco a year ago that a lot of people believe in, signing the $10 million contract with Minnesota, that J.J. McCarthy is going to have the opportunity to sit back. He's going to be the starter. And what if he has a masterful year? Don't vote for him. He's not coming back from anything that meets this criteria.
True. And I would say if you didn't have the criteria, I'd also note if you're thinking about passing yards, though, I think that they want to get McCarthy ready midseason.
You do.
I think Darnold's going to have to be playing at a very high level to hang on to the job all year. It's his job right now. It's his job. But they're definitely trying to groom McCarthy into the backup role by the time, the number two on the depth chart by the time the season starts. And maybe they want him to be ready week five, week six, week seven, week eight, depending on the results. Now, if Darnold goes out there and he's having an all-pro type season, and you're going to keep them, and they're winning games, that's not going to happen. But I think the leash might be short if he's having just a decent year.
Okay. Do you feel that way about Drake May as well?
I don't know. I'm not high on Drake May, so I don't know. But like, what does he have to compete with either? I think Darnold.
Well, it's like we expect the Patriots are going to be bad, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you're not costing yourself wins by throwing the rookie quarterback in and making a change. But my thing is, and I've said it a ton, especially over the last couple of weeks, that how many quarterbacks are ruined versus being developed in this league? And like Drake May, I understand he is one of the guys that has fewer years of collegiate experience compared to some of these other players, and you want to get him reps, but at what cost? I think that he should sit back, learn how to be a pro, get that opportunity to grow and develop.
What on the side of what cost is what you're saying, and what do you put into that bubble of what cost? Learning to be a loser, injury, bad habits. What's in that bubble? What's the number one thing in that bubble?
I think all of those. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a confidence killer as well. If you're being thrown into a team that is already really struggling, we don't know what the defense is going to be. I mean, I tried to hype up their defense last year, and you're like, in what way? They've had a couple good games. Like, no.
So the Jets.
If they've got a bad defense, if they don't have a lot of weapons, if they're not getting good protection, if you're putting him in a bad situation, I would rather him sit back and just develop relationships, start building chemistry behind the scenes, see what you can do next year when you have an opportunity to build out. You don't have the toughest schedule in all of the NFL this year, like, let's throw that wrinkle into this as well.
I go back to the counter argument to that to me is Aikman, who as a rookie they put in there to go. Now, he didn't go. He got hurt several times, right? But that 1-15 mm-hmm. season after they fired Landry, but he was the starter, you know, and they took that to 3 NFL championships, which probably should have been more with that team. But
and
the talent was unbelievable.
Peyton Manning had a terrible rookie season as well, and then look what he ended up going on to accomplish.
You're like, taking, like, you know, Hall of Famers.
We're cherry picking, yeah.
And go through all the other ones that it didn't work out for. I mean, I have to do more research to come up with the arguments, but I don't think they're winning with anybody. So the one argument is, do you get him reps? Do you get him at the speed of the game of an NFL game and learning, or do you get him into a situation? It's not like he came from a great winning tradition, though. I would say about these North Carolina, they never won anything. I mean, Mac Brown came, but they haven't won ACC title.
He's a guy that has physical tools that needs a lot of fine-tuning. Like, that's how I see it, and I would prefer him to have the fine-tuning without having to be on a football field and potentially getting wrecked. But let's go back to comeback player of the year in general here real quickly. The favorite, obviously, is Aaron Rodgers, who got all of 4 plays into last season before tearing his Achilles. He, unlike Kirk Cousins, should be like full-blown, ready to go, feeling himself at the start of the season because of the way that his recovery process has been elongated. Kirk Cousins, meanwhile, of course, he had his injury mid-season, so that's going to take a little bit longer. Joe Burrow sitting there as well, coming off of the wrist injury that ended his season at plus 250. And I'm also curious, tying this in with MVP, somebody tweeted this at us yesterday asking about, so if one of the, like, let's say Aaron Rodgers has an MVP season, is he comeback player of the year and MVP? Like, how are voters going to
I think the very interesting thing, especially someone so short a shot in an awards market at this point, won't it be he be penalized by how good he was throughout his career? Like, if he comes back and has a nice year, but it doesn't compare to the stats he had prior to the injury, do people still say, oh, he's the comeback player of the year? Or is he going to be held to the standard of 45 touchdowns versus 6 interceptions? And
his last season in Green Bay wasn't great.
But his second to last season was.
Sure, yeah.
So I think there's a little bit, though, and that'd be something we'd ask Professor Aaron Moore about, the voters' mentality. Also, the voters now have criteria, right, where they didn't for the first time.
For Deshaun Watson, are we far enough removed from the off-field stuff for him to get a real look at this if he plays well?
No, not in this society. I don't think so.
How about Anthony Richardson at 6-1? We saw sparks. We saw flashes.
Such a short window of what he's coming back from, right? Like,
yeah.
It never really started.
That's a good point. But people were so excited about what they had seen on the field, and it was cut short. But at 6-1, I feel like that, too, is too short. Tank Dell got shot, and he was injured.
How about your boy Tank Dell? I was going to say, I love this kid.
He's wonderful.
Can he win it as a wide receiver? I mean, it's probably going to be a quarterback.
It's all these awards. Like, why do we have to give the quarterbacks everything? We have to give MVP is just a quarterback award now. We got to give comeback player of the year to the quarterback. We got to give the quarterback these ungodlike contracts, even though they don't deserve them.
You're still holding on to that Tyreek Hill.
He should have been MVP.
Right? You're still the St. Jude? What is he called? St. Jude?
St. Jude's play. You're better off donating to St. Jude than placing a bet in that market on Tyreek Hill to be offensive player of the year. I mean, to be MVP last year. No. Which Tyreek Hill, by the way, favorite to be offensive player of the year. Sure. Yet, Christian McCaffrey is a shorter shot as the first non-quarterback to be MVP, if there were to be one, which I found interesting.
I think Cousins is interesting in this market. Because he also gets to go to a team that's really struggled offensively, right? And if he can put up numbers there and transform that Atlanta offense, it goes further into the narrative of how good he was. So I think, like, I could never bet Rodgers at +125. I mean, that just seems to me to be, when there's uncertainty of, do we know he's going to be heavily, do we know he's mentally, I mean, he's off on his own tangents of things that he's passionate about, right? And we know your feelings about the head coach there. And so I'm like, that to me is a ridiculous number.
The whole thing, by the way, this offseason with I love how Michael has come on the show and just said, we went through yesterday, they were getting a summer school assignment, basically. That's something that we've been doing this week, as Michael's been going through all 32 teams.
Is that part of his office still, or is it a whole different
thing? This is a different thing.
Whole different
but
shtick.
We went to the Jets, and I said, what's priority one for them? He goes through this list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different things that are all off the field before he's like, and then we got to see if they can bring it together on the field. And it's but that just goes to show, like, the state of the Jets right now around Aaron Rodgers, despite all of the conversation from him being about, it's got to be all about football. It's got to be all about football. Yet with Aaron Rodgers, it's never about football, I feel like.
It's never about football. That hasn't been what his life has been for the last couple years. So we'll see.
We shall see. And I'm also curious, too, about the offensive line. I know, obviously, you go out and you get Smith, you get Morgan Moses to upgrade that unit. But this is an offensive line last year that was abysmal, had 13 different combinations because of various guys getting injured. And then you bring in two veterans who also have injury history. I don't know. It's just there's a lot of ifs, and that's why we call them the ifers on this program. But I know a lot of folks are very, very high on the New York Jets, and I can understand why from a talent standpoint. We're going to hit the break. When we return, wrapping things up the only way we know how on a Friday, recapping our bets for the day, and would Palm have a qualm with these plus money wagers? We will be right back.
Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Even in the offseason, the GM Shuffle podcast is a must listen for any and every football fan. Hear from our guy, Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, giving out his unfiltered opinions on players, teams, and coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday throughout the year. Right now, he and Femi Abebefe going through an interview series. Phil Sims on the pod this past week. Chris Ballard this week. Download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcasts. We're wrapping things up on this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Mike Palm and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Gonna close out, rehash some of the bets that we have gone through in the show. Start with a little baseball. What you got today?
Two plays on the major league slate today. We're going to play the Mariners, continuing their road trip going from Cleveland to South Florida to take on the Marlins. George Kirby, number available in the market right now around -$1.70. Rogers, 1-9 for the Marlins so far this year with an ERA north of 5. And then I played a first 5 under, Kansas City at Texas. Singer against Evoldi, first 5 under 4.5 -120. Is the number there. So those are my two plays on the card.
All right. How about in the NHL tonight? The Panthers were as high as -2,500 in the series, up 3-0. Still odds on at -330. Edmonton +275 to come back in the set, do something that's not been done since 1942. Favored in game 6 tonight at home, -120, down from -125 yesterday. And the total stays at that 5.5 despite 3 straight overs. Anything that you think is worth betting tonight, or are you going to follow Jonathan Davis and his Connor McDavid Conn Smythe play?
I would look at first period under here. I take the late 275. You want to put up?
I don't want to.
Huh? You want to put up 13,750 each, and we'll go bet it to win 10?
We'll go in on it together. We'll
go in
see
together.
What we can do.
I'm just going to let it go.
Just let it ride.
I'm going to let it go. I hope they win.
See if Bobrovsky can get a shutout.
1-0, and they win on a power play on a bad McDavid penalty.
Ooh, now we're cooking with gas. Oh, yeah. Okay, time to round out the show with Wood Palm Have a Qualm. Roll the open.
Some bets just don't sit right with Mike Palm. You took all the money you made and bet it against the Harlem Globetrotters? Are you considering a bet that would make him sick?
I'm going to throw up. I think I'm going to throw up.
Don't throw up.
It's time to ask Mike, would Palm have a qualm?
Okay, let's see if any of these bets make Mike Palm physically ill or if we're willing to roll with it. And we're going to start here with the goaltending matchup. But instead of Bobrovsky, maybe this is a way that we can save the ticket. If you don't want to lay -275, could you take a 10-1 price on Stuart Skinner to have a shutout tonight?
What about 12-1? I've got 12-1 here.
Oh, is that not what I said? Sorry.
You said 10-1.
12-1, pardon.
Big qualm at 10-1 since 12-1 is available.
Okay.
No qualm at 12.
Well played. 12
to, it's kind of a hedge on our tickets, right? But I think the Panthers would win. I don't think that number's that bad. I was thinking this would be more like 9-1, but it's okay at 12-1.
We talked about this with JD earlier. Stuart Skinner, 9-0 in games 4-7 of their respective series this postseason, allowing 2 goals or fewer in 7 of the 9. So no qualm at 12-1. Let's go to the WNBA. I know you love your girl, Caitlin Clark, the Indiana Fever. Would you have a qualm with them to make the playoffs +130? They're currently sub-500 at 6-10.
I think this is a good bet. And I have to tell you, 8 of the 12 teams make the playoffs starting. I mean, there's only 4 that miss it.
Small league.
Down to her and her foil, Angel Reese, right? Battling it out down the stretch for the 8th position. They play again this weekend. This is the 3rd time they've met this year, but for the first time in Chicago, Angel averaging a double-double. You can still get her around 9-1 for Rookie of the Year. I think the big difference with the Fever, honestly, is not Caitlin has suddenly stepped up her game, but that her and Aaliyah Boston have gotten on the same page. Aaliyah Boston.
And she's gotten better.
Aaliyah Boston's the more dominant player of the two. I don't, for the people in Iowa, I don't hate me for saying that, but watching these games, she takes over the games. Caitlin's shot comes and goes. She's been a much better rebounder than she was in college. Like, she comes closer to the double-double with the rebounds. She's a tremendous passer. These girls, they drop the ball, they get it stripped away, so she doesn't get the assist that she deserves, but those two getting on the same page has made a lot of difference. Now, they have played the easier part of their schedule, and they're going to go on a West Coast trip here in a few weeks, and we'll see how much better they've gotten. But I actually think this is a good bet.
Well, and with Boston, too, a stark contrast from what we saw at the very start of the year where she was
struggling.
Awful. She was really struggling. Let's go to college football, sport that you and I both love. How about Texas to go undefeated in the 2024 regular season? You can get +425, bet 100 to win 425.
I'm going to ask you what you think about that bet. I initially say yes, qualm. What do you think about this?
Looking through their schedule, it's on the easier side as it pertains to being in the SEC. They do have to go to the big house at Michigan in week 2, but They get Georgia at home. Their other road games at Vanderbilt, at Arkansas, at A&M, which we really don't know what they're going to be with a new head coach there. Very winnable games on the schedule. I don't have a qualm. I think it's very possible. It's Georgia that you have to get over.
But I feel like they stubbed their toe. I feel like the Texas team all through the years, they've always stubbed their toe.
Like, I look at Michigan, you'll beat Colorado State. You got Michigan in week two, who has returning, what did I say yesterday, 128th in college football and returning production this year. New head coach in Sherrone Moore. UTSA, UL Monroe, Mississippi State, Oklahoma. Georgia's the tough one. Vandy, Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas A&M. It's very winnable. I understand what you're saying, but that's why I'm not going to bet this at even money or plus 200.
But you would make this bet plus 425?
I don't hate it. That's a pizza money play, Michael. Mike, no qualm.
Yeah, I feel like as far as transitionally, though, Sherrone Moore is a smooth transition. It's just about the talent level he has. But you get him
new
early. You get him early. Yeah, you get him early. I probably wouldn't make the bet, but I don't have a qualm with it.
Yeah, no qualm. And that's what this is about.
I'm not going to vomit when I read that bet. Getting physically ill about any of this. All right.
Okay, Snoop Dogg, who will sponsor this year's Arizona Bowl, recently announced the game will become the first to provide NIL deals to competing players, a model that some believe could become a new norm for bowl games to incentivize players. Does Palm have a qualm with pay-for-play bowl games?
No, because the bowl games have become a joke. They were my favorite part of the college football season, and I thought very handicappable, good betting opportunities. And now you have no idea going up the day before the game who's going to play. All the opt-outs take the luster off these. I have no problem with incentivizing players to play, whether it's through NIL, whether it's through paying winning team players. I don't have a problem with that.
They don't need the gifts in the gift suite, okay? They don't need any more backpacks. These kids want cash. We'll see if that'll help. I mean, obviously, some players, even not the high-level players, right, are just saying, I want to prepare for the draft. I don't want to worry about getting injured. Maybe that's a way to convince some more people. It's also been less than a week since Joel Embiid sat next to Paul George on the ESPN set before the NBA Finals game, where he was making those wide eyes at Paul George. Although there have been some reports the Sixers' interest in George has, quote, been significantly waning. Paul George going to the 76ers is plus 280. Would you have a qualm?
I have a qualm simply because I don't want to have anything to do with paying attention to Paul George, what happens to him. Zero interest. Pass.
It's an odds-on number for him to remain with the Clippers. Would Palm have a qualm with marriage proposals at sporting events?
Where did Chris propose to you?
He proposed to me on the beach at Del Mar before we went into the racetrack.
That's outrageous that it wasn't someplace on property here. At Legacy
at
Stadium
Swim.
I'm
sorry, we got married here. Was that not enough for you?
That's very disloyal. I proposed in a hot air balloon. Over Napa
That's
Valley.
That's risky,
over
though.
Over Napa Valley.
What if the ring, like, there's wind up there?
What
if the ring
said
flies
no?
away?
What if she
oh, yeah,
said
then
no.
you're trapped.
Now I hope we crash.
You don't ask the, but see, I always say, like, you don't ask the question if you don't know the answer.
That's true.
Right?
She also picked out her ring, so there was okay. I would say no, I have no problem. The woman then knows what she's getting into.
Yes.
With the obsession with sports.
I feel like you should have already had the conversation if you're a woman. That you watch enough sports with your husband, if you see that with your soon-to-be husband, you can say, oh, God, that's the one way I would not want it to have happen. You should know that if you've been together long enough. How about this one? Rory McIlroy obviously withdrew from this week's Travelers Championship. Mm-hmm. He's taken the month off after the U.S. Open defeat. Would you have a qualm with him bouncing back at the British in July?
No. I don't have a qualm with that bet at all.
7-1?
He actually putted very well in the final round and blows those 2 4-footers. It's amazing.
He was putting unbelievable. He was
hitting
great. The long putt.
He became a big favorite here in game, right? And then he blows the two. And I mean, I'm glad DeChambeau won. He seems like quite a character in that. But no, I think he'll be able to mentally recover.
Apparently, the Raiders are offering an all-inclusive $20,000 tailgate package. Would you have a qualm with spending $20,000 to tailgate an NFL game? How is that? What does this include?
I would like to have a team that I'd like to have a team that has a quarterback. If I'm going to pay 20,
it's for 20 people. Not still not worth it.
No,
not worth
it. You can watch them right here at Stadium Swim for a tenth of that with your 20 friends.
All right, what do you have going on this weekend? Anything fun?
I'll be with Ben Wilson, reunited with Ben Wilson tomorrow on Live Bet Saturday.
Beautiful.
We did the show in the fall over at Bar Canada.
You guys do such a great job, whether it's Femi Ebebefe, whether it's Ben Wilson, the chemistry is always there. I mean, it's not us. It's not you and I, you know. Look at this beautiful treasure.
I mean, they've always wanted to put us together ever since my gals in the desert.
Oh, what a time to be alive. You're the sometimes this guy. All right, that's it for us today. Good luck with your bets. Enjoy your weekend. Sharp Money on VSiN is coming up next. If you're watching on DraftKings Network, it's Pablo Torre finds out. Don't change that dial.